You blew it, Wish. You totally blew it, Greg. You blew it. I had this whole big intro because, you blew it because now you're a big TV star. And normally when I hop back on for the top of the hour, you're already waiting. And Lance Kennedy, playing the keyboards behind us, said, hang on, well, we haven't got Greg yet. And so I was going to whole big bit about how now you've sold out and you're mainstream and doing TV hits and bottom of the hour, you got to hop on TV, put on the suit and tie. And, you know, we've lost our, you know, my former blogger buddy from, you know, Puck Daddy and Yahoo. And now he's big time now. But then you showed up and wrecked all of it.
Well, I didn't say anything about pants. So, I mean, I might be wearing a little business on the top, a little party on the bottom, yeah, if you know what I'm saying. But
that.
No, it's good. It's good to be busy, as you know. And yeah. The last 12 hours for me were writing 2 to 3 things after game 4 and then hopping on an aeroplane this morning after like 2 hours of sleep and then getting in and then finding out all the other things I had to write and then hopping on the TV show today. So it's like... good to be busy. Can't complain about it.
A couple of things. One, I always say the opposite is worse. And two, I always remember my favorite line from The Godfather, which goes like this, Greg. This is the business we chose.
That's
always
right.
Always remember that. This is
never
the business
complaints.
We chose. Okay, let me open up with one here.
Okay.
Do the Rangers look tired to you for the first time in these playoffs, or are they just out of sorts because, you know, 2 out of their 4 centers are injured?
They don't look tired. The only question about fatigue that I have, unfortunately, is about their best player.
because just that.
Yeah, just that. I'm not saying that Igor Shesterkin was bad in game 4, okay? And I'm not saying that any of this is on him. I am saying that from an analytics standpoint, it was clearly his weakest game of the series. He was barely above replacement. And at some point, you have to wonder if games in which he faced 86 shots, yeah. A game just the other day in which he faced 52 shots, a 2-7-game series, the weight of the world on his shoulders for this team, if it all does catch up at some point. And again, like it's not that he played great. Like he's still Shesterkin. He's great. But you have to wonder at this point, if you had 2 trains traveling in the same direction, if Vasi's train's going a little faster right now, you know what I'm saying? Like I'm a little bit concerned about the amount of work that Igor's had to do and the amount of work he might have to do going forward if one of these centers can't play in game 5.
Well, that's the big story going into game 5 here is Ryan Strom, who, like, it became pretty obvious really early in yesterday's game how much the Rangers need Ryan Strom, because that second line really looked out of sorts quickly. And we've talked plenty about Filip Hedl and, you know, the rise of Hedl through the playoffs. And here's someone that, you know, endured high profile, you know, scratchings by Gerard Gallant and then instructions to stare at Mika Zibanejad and just do what he does when we let you back on the ice, which, you know, players are human beings here. That's a tough one. I get it.
You could do worse.
They could do worse and stare at Mika Zibanejad. Let's start with Strom. I know he doesn't get the headlines of Kreider and Panarin, Fox, etc., Shesterkin. But it's really obvious when he's out of the lineup how much this guy is a big part of this team. Like, I know Panarin and Kopp on that second line are huge pieces. Certainly Panarin, who, you know, at his best is always a Hart Trophy candidate. But man, this team needs Ryan Strom, and this line needs Ryan Strom.
Panarin needs Ryan Strom. It's one of the more interesting, nuanced arguments amongst Rangers fans, because Andrew Kopp is really good. And I think that there is a desire to keep him beyond this season. And rightfully so. He's a very, very talented player, can do a lot of different things, and certainly fits within their top 6. There's a certain amount of underrating Ryan Strom in comparison to Andrew Kopp. And a thought of, like, you can't afford both. So it's definitely Kopp we're keeping. when you look at how Strome plays with Panarin, you look at his value at 5-on-5. I mean, again, you know, he goes out of the series, Merrick. They had scored one even strength goal since the first period of game two. Okay, so like there's, you know, something amiss right now at 5-on-5, and you're absolutely right. When the Zibanejad line is being kept in check by Sorelli's line, and they made some headway against that checking line in game four, but not enough. And when the kid line gets gutted because Heedle's their engine, well, you need the Panarin line to do something. And without Strome there, they couldn't.
See, I wonder about that decision too, because I'm firmly of the camp that that Andrew Kopp has put himself in a position to get either the Philip Deneau contract or the Zach Hyman contract. Like, mm-hmm. I think he's getting one of those two deals from someone. I'm sure the Rangers would, you know, like it to be them, but I think it's going to be a really robust market for Andrew Cobb. But I look at like what you're just talking about there, like how much of an investment do you want to continue to make here in Artemi Panarin? Because I don't think you can just say, oh, he can play with anybody. He's Panarin. You have something that works. You know, like Bob McCowan's old line around the fan of Toronto was always, you know, whenever we would ask him for advice on anything, he would always just say, are you happy? Because if you're happy, don't F with happy. And it seems that with Strome, you know, Artemi Panarin's really happy and it's really working. Like, to me, it just seems like a perfect fit, Strome with the Rangers. Whereas, you know, maybe it wasn't with the Islanders, it wasn't with the Oilers. It's, you know, players find homes. And I don't know, if I'm the Rangers, I would have a real tough time walking away from that.
Now I'm thinking about your conversation and just hearing in my head, you know, Jeff, for example, I am happy wearing sunglasses, so I do not mess with happy. I keep the sunglasses on. Yeah, I agree. And I do, you know, it's the Strome Panarin thing reminded me of a situation in baseball. Remember how in baseball there are some pitchers that prefer a certain catcher over the other catcher?
And the other catcher. And they will go with them. And they will go with them from team to team.
And the other catcher might, right, the other catcher might be a better hitter. He might be a better all around player. He might be essential to your lineup. But if your ace says, actually, I need this guy to catch me, he's probably going to have that guy catch him. And to me, Panarin and Strome have such a unique chemistry together on that line and always have, that I agree with you. I think it'd be difficult to really make an argument for jettisoning Strome to keep Kopp, considering how important he's been to Panarin. Now, let me say this about game five. And this is with the caveat that I'm expecting Strome to play. I'm not sure about Heedle. That's kind of where I am right now, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. I have seen the Harvey Dent of hockey, a.k.a. the Rangers in the playoffs, too often to discount the fact that they're going back to MSG and it's a best 2-of-3 series. I have seen this team look atrocious, beaten down, defeated, controlled in Raleigh. I've seen them come back to Madison Square Garden and look like the Avalanche, right? Like, they're scoring 4.22, I believe it is, goals per game on home ice versus like 2.24 on the road. I know that, yeah, from you, and I get where you're going with it, which is that the Hurricanes are not the Lightning, and the Lightning have figured out this series, and yada, yada, yada. But yep. I have seen this story too many times before. I've seen it too many times before where the Rangers go home, they flip the switch, all of a sudden they become a different team. And if you listen to what they were saying last night, I think they were striking the right balance between confidence that they're going to get to their game when they get back to MSG and the blind optimism that they aren't going to have a chance in the series unless the magical fairy dust of MSG is sprinkled all over their bodies when they get there.
So a couple of things there. When you were talking about pitchers and catchers that follow pitchers around because they're just more comfortable with them, you see that with knuckleballers,
yep.
Right? Like Doug Mirabelli was the catcher of choice always for Tim Wakefield.
Yeah,
like that was a combination. Here in Toronto, Josh Toley was behind the plate for R.A. Dickey. You old school fans will remember Chris Bando. There's an old one. Wow. Man, I love baseball. Chris Bando for Phil Niekro. He was, I listen, I love the knuckleball phenomenon. I'm a geek about it, Wish. So anytime I can squeeze in knuckleball and knuckleball catcher references onto anything I do, I take the chance. So thank you for opening that door. Two, the difference I see with this Tampa team and the Rangers right now, and, you know, okay, the Rangers have, you know, taken the standing 8 count. They're against the ropes as the round is counting down. You know, Tampa took care of the Florida Panthers in 4 games, just laid the boots to the Panthers and reminded them, you know, who the big dog is in the state and in the division. They had 9 days off, and I've always felt that rest doesn't show up in game one. Like, the effects of rest doesn't show up in game one, but it shows up later in the series. When the Rangers, like we talked about this last week, the Rangers were in that rhythm, right? Play a game, rest a day. Play a game, rest a day. And there's that rhythm, and then there's that pattern. But that does catch up to you. You know, it's like 18 games in 35 nights. Like, that is going to catch up to you. And unfortunately, it looks like it caught up to them, for me anyhow, last night specifically. And this is where you start to see the effects of the 9 days off that Tampa had. Because the first couple of days, you know, first couple of games, you're coming back from a 9 day layoff, you're going to be a little bit rusty. Ah, the puck went off the heel. Ah, the puck went off the toe. Eh, you know what? We allowed too many east-west passes. We got to clean that up in our own zone. You don't really feel the effects of rest, I don't think, until games like 3, 4, and 5. And it kind of feels and looks to me, Wish, like that's playing itself out now. That would be the only difference that I would say, you know, as you bring up the example of, I've seen the New York Rangers do the Undertaker routine before, you know, Taker's down on his back and all of a sudden, you know, sits up. We've seen it before. I just think this time it feels a little bit different because of the rest that Tampa's had.
You've said a lot there. Let me touch on a few things. First of all,
knuckleballers
in the
Chris Bando stories. What do you got?
Absolutely, I will definitely start talking about knuckleballers. On the Lightning, I've cleaned up their game aspect. I found an interesting stat. Game one, they had 28 giveaways. Game two, they had 22 giveaways. They had 13 giveaways combined in games 3 and 4. So that's cleaning up your game. That is playing a much more controlled, conservative. The way John Cooper said it, I think, was really interesting. He said, you have to earn your zone time, and then you can be creative. And I think they were putting the cart before the horse in the first couple of games in the series. So they cleaned that up. I think the layoff, I agree with Cooper, hurt Vasilevskiy more than anybody. He had his worst game in game one. He's gotten progressively better since then. And so I think that that's without question a huge impact on the series. And the reason it's 2-2 right now is that he wasn't himself in the first 2 games of the series. But the other thing I'll say about fatigue is that it is really easy to get fatigued when you are A, climbing out of a hole because you gave up a goal to Pat Maroon in the first 2 minutes of the game, and B, constantly playing on defense. And you know, the key to the Cirelli-Zibanejad matchup has been not like them thwarting the Zibanejad line in the defensive zone. It's not even allowing them to get zone time. It's basically playing skate. In the Rangers zone. Yeah.
Make them skate 200 feet for their chance. Yes.
Correct.
Get the puck back and then skate for 200 feet. Then you can have your fun time in the offensive zone and you're tired.
Right, so they're getting their pucks behind the Ranger D, and Killorn said this the other day. He's like, all three guys in this line, me, Hagel, Cirelli, we all control the puck really well, like deep in the zone. So they're making the Kreider-Zibanejad line, no matter who the other winger is, work a lot. And so my counter argument to your fatigue argument is that if the Rangers can get to their game and look like the team that they've looked like on home ice during an 8-game winning streak, by the way, 8-game winning streak, the only loss they have is in triple overtime. Then the fatigue thing becomes less of a factor for me because they're not going to have to work as hard to get those chances, earn those chances, and exhaust themselves defensively if they look like the team they've looked like in other home games.
Okay, let me move to the Edmonton Oilers and the Colorado Avalanche here, because I know there's a reality of television coming up for you here in a couple of minutes. whether or not you're wearing pants, we'll see you. You might be half man, half desk. I don't know if this is a full body shot.
Hey, everybody, watch the point. Watch the point on ESPN2. I'll pan down and we'll see what's going on.
Yes. Controversies. Oh, okay. Very good. We might find out what religion Greg is.
Oh, no.
So... Sorry. How about the reveal today? Ken Holland saying that Leon Draisaitl played with a high ankle sprain after the Mikey Anderson takedown in the Los Angeles series. I've never had a high ankle sprain. I've talked to plenty of people who have had them. You know, Elliot said he had one. He could barely go from the couch to the bed, let alone play, you know, a series of competitive hockey, let alone two. Louis DeBrusque put up a great point on the show yesterday where he said it's become really obvious that Leon Draisaitl is the best stationary passer in the game, and we saw that on display. Do you have a thought on what we just saw from Draisaitl?
That's a great point. I mean, like, he didn't have the wheels, but he still put up 4 points. Like, it's incredible.
He's still passing better than everybody, and he couldn't move.
Yeah, yeah. My thought is your thought, which is that high ankle sprain has become one of those injuries in hockey where you hear it, and it's usually like a high impact player that gets it, and then you're just like, all right, we're not going to have Sid for like 2 months, right? Like, yep. It's that kind of thing, right? And so for him to play through it is remarkable, and you know, even though he played through it, he wasn't himself, and that's where my bummed outedness comes from in that series. Like, they didn't have a prayer if they didn't have Connor and Leon both going. And I feel like we got really shortchanged. I think the Avalanche are the better team. I'm happy that they get a chance to play for the Cup, but man, did we get shortchanged in that series.
But the thing is, that's the story of playoff hockey. And, you know, like, you're always getting shortchanged. By the time the Stanley Cup final rolls around, you know, everybody's missing a few key guys. Everybody's banged up. You know, the quality of hockey, as much as every shift is, you know, loaded with, you know, emotional over and undertones, you're not getting the best of game.
But you're talking, but not every team is the Oilers. Like, if the Lightning lose Braden Point, it's like, all right, we'll just have to rely on Steven Stamkos and Nikita Kucherov. Like, we know what the Oilers are. Like, the Oilers are a team where it's like two stilts and then there's a house on it. And if one of the stilts has a leg that's going to fall off, well, then they're not going anywhere. The house is falling into the ocean. So that's my point, is like, not, that's the Oilers. Like, the Oilers need both of those guys. And you can make the argument like, injuries, what have you, with other teams. We've seen teams play with third string goalies. I understand that injuries happen, but like, the Oilers are a very specific case where Leon and Connor grab this team by the scruff of their neck and pull them through three rounds. And then they get to the third round and Leon just can't go the way he does. And I know that he had the points and what have you, but anyone who watches the game knows that it's not the same thing.
What do you make of the Oilers offseason that's on the horizon? Mike Smith was noncommittal about next season. Ken Holland today saying he was banged up throughout the entire year. Evander Kane is a fascinating story right now, because right now Evander Kane's not in charge of that. The Oilers aren't in charge of that. An arbitrator's in charge of that. He may, you know, order that Evander Kane has to go back to San Jose if he rules it, you know, that if it goes that way. And then all of a sudden we have another, bit of drama, and does, you know, San Jose look to move him to Edmonton, who clearly want him? Would have to eat half the contract in the process. But what are the bigger questions that you have for Edmonton this offseason? Like, are they close and just need some tweaks, or are there still some, you know, is there still some heavy lifting that Ken Holland needs to do?
So let me get this straight. We don't know what we're getting with Mike Smith yet. Is that what you're saying? That's amazing. That's so out of character.
No. But the thing is, like, in this series, like, within some games, we saw everything of Mike Smith. We saw, like, you look at that game three, like, Evander Kane takes that 5-minute major. Edmonton doesn't touch the puck. The only person that touches the puck from Edmonton is Mike Smith, and he's fantastic. But then there's a GT Comfort goal.
Yeah, he makes every save he's not supposed to make and can't make the saves he's supposed to make. That's him in a nutshell. But they'll run him back. They'll have to find another goalie. I like the Kemper idea that some people have been putting out there as a possibility.
Yeah, they tried before.
Evander Kane's a tough one, man, because, like, I feel at the price point they got him at, it's one of the greatest acquisitions we've had in the last 3 years. But now, like, what are you committing to him? Are you committing dollars? Are you committing term? If it's term, I'm scared of that because he's Vander Kane. If it's money, I mean, yeah, that's great. I mean, it is hard to find guys that can put up the numbers he put up next to Connor. And maybe that keeps Connor happy, which, of course, is also a very important facet of any decision you make.
It's going to be a fascinating one. I want to get to let's park Colorado because we're going to talk about them planning the next few weeks, obviously. And I know you got to get to TV here. So let me ask you about the Boston Bruins situation. They fire Bruce Cassidy. We have questions about Patrice Bergeron. He's got the elbow injury now, taking his time, going to figure out what he wants to do, if he's going to come back. If not, now there's a situation with David Pastrnak, Fluto Shinzawa's piece. You know, Elliot saying and reporting after talking to JP Barry that they're going to sit down in July, Sweeney and JP, and try to see if there's some common ground here to work out an extension. McAvoy's injury, Grizzlick's injury, Marchand's injury. Where is this all going for you, Wish?
Well, it's going down the tubes in at least the first 2 months of the season. That's for sure. But, you know, what does it look like? I think Bergeron's the canary in the coal mine, right? Like, we're going to find out what this team is going to do going forward if he comes back or if he doesn't. And, you know, is Cassidy's firing an indication that the window of opportunity is closed? Internally, they don't say so. Internally, they think they can still be competitive with the with the roster that they have. But, like, would it behoove them to not be? And I think the answer there is probably yes. They've taken a lot of kicks at the can here. And if Bergeron doesn't come back, well, now you're talking about Chara, Rask, Bergeron, Krejci off the core of that team. And at some point, you have to say to yourself, it's not that team anymore, despite Marchand and Pastrnak being there and McAvoy. So does that mean you trade everybody? I don't think it does. But that's going to be contingent on what Pastrnak wants to do. I think this look, the Rangers are a great example. You could turn this thing around pretty darn quickly with some shrewd management. Now, granted, I don't think I have the highest of confidence that Sweeney's that manager, but you definitely don't have to go in the tank for 5 years in this league anymore, especially if you've got a decent veteran core.
And it really helps when you have an elite level goaltender. And that to me is the question. Like, I understand, like, even if you have to move David Pastrnak, if Pastrnak says, like, look, Bergeron's gone, you know, the forward unit is a hash here. I don't want, like, everyone else has jumped off the ship. I'm next. I like the blue line. I don't know about the forwards. To me, that is still a huge question mark. And I think Jeremy Swayman's a really good goaltender. I just haven't seen enough, so I don't know. You know, by the end of the season, Linus Ullmark was a really good goaltender. And we all loved the hugs, and it was fun. It was cool. Yay, it's cool, man. But to me, the big part of the Rangers story is Shesterkin. You know, there's this, you know, unfair chain that goes from Mike Richter to Henrik Lundqvist, now to Igor Shesterkin.
Totally.
It's the envy of the NHL, not unlike what the Boston Bruins have had with, you know, Orr to Park to Bork to Chara, now to McAvoy. It's some teams just have that luck. Love the blue line. I think I like the net minding. Don't like the forwards. But I'm with you. Like, you don't need to stick the TNT in this thing to get that next phase of Boston Bruins. We'll end on this one. We'll finish your thought on it, then I'll let you get the TV.
Don't like the GM. I think the coach paid for the GM a little bit in this situation.
But
I mean, he inherited a really good situation, did Sweeney. And in all that we've seen for the most part in these years, and again, we've also seen a team play for the cup, that's true, is a lot of talent walk out the door. Dougie, Krug, maybe Pastrnak now. Like, it's a lot of talent walking out that door. That's all I'm saying.
And you know what? You know what, Greg? You get the sense too. And maybe it's like we talked about that goofy puck thing that Brad Marchand does on the on the pyramid, leaves one for Torrey Krug. You see the videos with David Pastrnak and David Krejci walking down the cobblestone streets. You're like, this was a really tight knit team.
Yeah,
but these are guys that really messed
with them.
Yeah, really, I think it did too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think that was a big one. More like when the book on, and I hope someone does write a book on this era of the Boston Bruins. Letting Krug go is going to be a big part of the story.
I will only read that book if Jack Edwards writes it.
so you get civil war references all the way through. And drums and bugles and bandages around your head and coming up over the hill. And
he blames the Canadians for all of the Bruins' ills. That's the whole book is.
I love it. Remain consistent. All right, go be a TV star. Thanks, Greg Wyshynski, as always. You be good. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN is a big TV star, leaving us all in the dust. Wah, wah, wah.